Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 31. Narada instructs the Pratetas, text 3. Tanirjita pranamanovicho vicho Jitasanan shanta samana vigraha Aremale brahmani yojitatmana Surasarejo dadrishesma narada. Translation. After practicing the yogasana for mystic yoga, the Pratetas managed to control their life air, mind, words, and external vision. Thus, by the pranayama process, they were completely relieved of all material attachment. By remaining perpendicular, they could concentrate their minds on the uppermost Brahman. While they were practicing this pranayama, the great sage Narada, who is worshipped by both demons and demigods, came to see them. Purport. In this verse, the words pare amale are significant. The realization of Brahman is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. The absolute truth is realized in three phases: impersonal effulgence, Brahman, localized Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. In his prayers, Lord Shiva concentrated upon the personal features of Parabrahman, described in personal terms as Snigdha Pravid Ghanashyamam. Following the instructions of Lord Shiva, the Pratetas also concentrated their minds on the Sham Sundara form of the Supreme Brahman. Although impersonal Brahman, Paramatma Brahman, and Brahman as the Supreme Person are all on the same transcendental platform, the personal feature of the Supreme Brahman is the ultimate goal and last word in transcendence. The great sage Narada travels everywhere. He goes to the demons and the demigods and is equally respected. He is consequently described herein as Sura Sarejya, worshipped both by demons and by demigods. For Narada Muni, the door of every house is open. Although there is perpetual animosity between the demons and demigods, Narada Muni is welcomed everywhere. Narada is considered one of the demigods, of course, and the word Devarshi means the saintly person among the demigods. But not even the demons envy Narada Muni. Therefore, he is equally worshipped both by demons and by demigods. A perfect Vaishnava's position should be just like Narada Muni's, completely independent and unbiased. Om Ganatimadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshrun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The Pratetas are on their way back to Godhead because they heard the instructions of Lord Shiva and indeed chanted the prayers recited by Lord Shiva. They attained darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what the Lord told them is very significant for all of us. The Lord personally expressed that I'm very satisfied by the relations amongst all of you brothers. I'm very satisfied by your cooperative spirit. So many brothers, yet they're working together to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They expressed to the Lord that their only motive is his satisfaction. The Supreme Personality of Godhead gave them the benediction that actually gave the listeners to the history of the Pratetas the benediction that anyone who hears their history every day. We'll always have good relations with brothers and have equal dealings with all living entities. The Supreme Personality of Godhead asked them to accept a benediction. The question, though, is how do you ask for a benediction from the unlimited? Srila Prabhupada points out that the only suitable response when the unlimited asks you to take a benediction is that you say, I'd like an unlimited benediction, because you are unlimited. So what is the unlimited benediction? Obviously, it can't be anything in the material world. The response of the Prachetas is very significant, especially now we are hearing about their wrapping up of their stay in the material world as they're on their way back to God. What happened was that the Supreme Personality of God had said, I want you to stay in the material world for some time and take care of affairs in the material world. And then you'll be able to go back to Godhead at the end. In response to the Lord's request, please take a benediction, before the Pratetas embarked upon managing worldly affairs, they had a very extraordinary request. A request that Srila Prabhupada says is most exemplary for all devotees. They said, our dear Lord, please, we realize we're very materially contaminated and we're going to wander through the material world in different bodies on different planets. The only benediction we ask is that we can have the association of pure devotees who are always chanting your glories. That indeed is the unlimited benediction, because Krishna's glories have no limitation. So the Pratetas were very intelligent. That intelligence is the product of pure devotional service. They knew exactly what to ask for. The purport to that verse is very astonishing, because Srila Prabhupada explains that this is actually the best attitude for all devotees. A real devotee thinks, I'm not qualified to go back to Godhead. Due to my contamination, I'll have to wander through the material world, but let me just have the benediction that I'll always have the association of devotees who are hearing and chanting about Krishna. This may sound like a disappointment to us. Well, if even the Pratetas, who have the darshan of the Supreme Lord, they say, we don't expect to go back to Godhead. We expect to just take birth after birth. And we just want the association of devotees who are hearing and chanting about Krishna. So you may say, if that's the way they think, what hope is there for us? But here you see the mysticism, if you want to call it that, of bhakti. Because if you're at a place where the glories of the Lord are purely chanted, you're already back to Godhead. So this is bewildering for the material conception. Naturally, from a neophyte point of view, we always want the best. Okay, if I can have the best material situation, then I want the best spiritual situation. Give me the best. I deserve the best, or even if I don't deserve it, I should have the best. It reminds me, the first time I was reading Prabhupada's books, and I read about the spiritual world, I imposed my material intelligence. I thought, this is so wonderful. What's going to happen when everyone finds out about the spiritual world? They're going to want to go there, and it's going to become overcrowded. I better hurry up and get there. That intelligence was the product of $200,000 worth of Yale University education. Oh, this is so great. Everyone's going to want to go there. It's going to become overcrowded. The population won't be controlled. Krishna himself told Narada Muni, and we're going to be discussing Narada Muni, that I don't reside in Vaikuntha. I don't reside in the hearts of the yogis. I reside wherever pure devotees are chanting my glories. So on the one side, what the Pratetas was saying is humiliating. And indeed, they are showing the greatest humility. We don't think we're qualified to go back to Godhead. Just give us the benediction to be where sincere, pure devotees are chanting your glories. So Srila Prabhupada mercifully explains this riddle, this mysticism to us, so in a way that we'll never forget it. You're already back to Godhead if you're in the association of devotees who are purely and sincerely reciting the glories of the Lord. And he explains how a real devotee thinks, I'm not qualified. Who am I? And Srila Prabhupada points out that even Srimati Radharani thinks like this. So just see, we have this attitude of, I am the best, I want the best. Even if I'm not the best, I still deserve the best. Krishna, what are you going to give me? Yet the topmost devotee, she's thinking, the devotees that I'm recommending to Krishna are more qualified than me. Certainly Krishna should accept them. You may remember the end of Srila Prabhupada's, I believe it was his Vyasa Puja offering to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. He wrote that, let me stay in the material world for crores of births that are due to me because of my sinful reactions. But I only ask for the memory that I'm just your insignificant servant. This is the mystery of bhakti. On the one hand, it seems materially deficient. Our material consciousness always inspires us to demand the best facilities from the viewpoint of material analysis. Or even when we look at the spiritual world, we think, what's the best? That's where I've got to go. Yet at the same time, we see that the greatest devotees are thinking, where's the service to the devotee? Where are the glories of the Lord being recited? Who am I to thrust myself in Krishna's face? So it's a paradox. Because actually, those who have that mentality, like the Pratetas are showing, they get the best, even though they think they're the worst. So it's quite a riddle. It's quite a paradox when seen from the material point of view. The Prachetas didn't bother to ask for freedom from the three modes of material nature. They were very sharp. They asked for devotional service, knowing that if they have devotional service, when done properly, is free from the modes of material nature. So in this way, through all humility, they actually ask for the best while thinking that they're the worst. So this is a great lesson to us all. Narada Muni is quite an extraordinary character. How it is that Sura Sejo Dadrishe Sma Narada, he's worshipped by both the demons and the demigods. How does that happen? We hear in the purport, not even the demons envy Narada Muni. Therefore, he is equally worshipped both by demons and by demigods. A perfect Vaishnava's position should be just like Narada Muni's, completely independent and unbiased. The nature of this material world is that you're always drowning in dependencies, contingencies, and biases. The material world is a politicized place because it's the world of duality. That's why Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, Dandamohena Bharata. Rise above these dualities of illusion. Any viewpoint in the material world, any standpoint, always has some opposite, something that's contesting it. Your political viewpoints, your economic viewpoints. There's always the right wing, the left wing, the top side, the downside. Any position or view you take in the material world, there's always the other side of the coin, because this is a world of duality. Sometimes we can see that even in our devotional society. To various degrees, devotees may become influenced that you say up, I say down. You say right, I say left. Of course, in the case of the pratetas, Srila Prabhupada explains that even though amongst devotees there can be differing opinions how to serve Krishna, because the disagreements, if they're 100% about how to serve Krishna and not materially influenced, then the disagreements are spiritual. How to have the clear focus on what is 100% for Krishna's pleasure amidst the material world, which is completely politicized into dualities. This is the great art. The Pratetas mastered that art. Even they, though, required some guidance, because when they came out from under the water, they saw the earth overgrown by trees, and they became very angry. Now, that anger is not ordinary anger. They were thinking, it's our service to manage the world. How can we do our service to Krishna when trees have overgrown everything? There won't be sufficient habitation or suitable habitation for human beings. So that was their anger. Our service, which has been given to us by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is being obstructed. We can't benefit the living entities. That was their anger. It wasn't selfish anger. Who are these trees getting in our way? No. They're thinking, we have to benefit living entities. How can we do this with the trees behaving in such a way? So they began to, as you know, burn all the trees. So Lord Brahma himself had to come and give guidance. That shows that even the greatest devotees rely on parampara. They rely on guidance. Guidance is inbuilt into bhakti. We can't conceive of bhakti without guidance. And even the greatest souls show that. In this way, the pratetas were not actually disconnected from equilibrium, but they just needed some help. And we'll all find in our spiritual progress that sometimes perplexing situations will come upon us, and we need the guidance of senior devotees. We need the association of our peers to help us see our way through this world of dualities, because things can get tricky, even in the society of devotees. Serve Krishna this way, or we should serve Krishna that way. That's not the best way to serve Krishna. This is a better way. But as long as our disagreements are free from material affinity, and as long as the disagreements are 100% about how to give Krishna pleasure, then Srila Prabhupada said, you can take the disagreements to be spiritual. But we can't just take that cheaply. That any time we have a disagreement, Prabhu, it's spiritual. Don't worry about it. And we do need to be mindful of the fact that the way the material world works is there's always an opposite side. So Narada Muni is the most skillful in how to stay above the dualities of material existence in terms of this side against that side. He benefits everyone. So therefore, Prabhupada writes, a perfect Vaishnava's position should be just like Narada Muni's, completely independent and unbiased. That is a great art, how to be completely independent and unbiased even within the material world. In the Bible, it is said that Jesus said, instructing his disciples. You have to be in the world, but not of the world. But he didn't give any spiritual technology of how to accomplish that noble purpose. Here we see that Narada Muni is demonstrating how to be in the world, but completely independent and unbiased. This is the nature of a fully developed devotee. Independent and unbiased because such a devotee is always seeing clearly what is the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You can see this in Vasudev, in his crisis on his wedding day. You know how Kamsa was about to kill Vasudev's new wife, and Vasudev had to think quickly. He tried so much logic and reason upon Kamsa. You shouldn't kill your sister, you know. It's not very good, you know. Things happen after death. Reactions come upon us. We have to take another body. But Kamsa wasn't having any of that. So then Vasudev made the best offer he could. And he put on his face a smile, even though internally he was in pain. This is interesting, that even though Vasudev is a perfectly equipoised devotee, still, this acharya say he's feeling pain, he's suffering inside, yet he's 100% focused on what is the best thing to do for Krishna's pleasure. That is the equanimity. Not that he's not feeling some kind of pain because his wife's about to be killed, but his equanimity is that 100% he's thinking and seeing what's the best thing to do in this situation for Krishna's pleasure. How am I going to bring about Krishna's appearance in this world? That's how cool-headed he is. That's how independent he is. So he smiled externally, although internally suffering, and he made the proposal to Kamsa. You're so concerned about the eighth child of Devaki. I will bring you all the children. Now, actually, you could say that Vasudeva is being duplicitous. Why? Because he's smiling on the outside, but inside he's in distress. He's not showing Kamsa his real feelings. But that is the way of this world, in that in a dangerous situation, even a Vaishnava, Prabhupada says, can be duplicitous for the sake of protecting Krishna's interests. This is a highly unusual situation, and we can't take it cheaply. Ah, Vasudeva was duplicitous. It's all for Krishna's service. This is a very unusual situation. And Vasudeva is commended for being duplicitous to protect Krishna's interests. At the same time, he is being completely equipoised. Shukadeva Goswami points out, Kim Dusanam, what can be the pain for such a sadhu as Vasudeva, such a saintly person? How could there be any pain? Because he's seeing that the essence is Krishna's pleasure, not my own personal happiness or distress. Kim apekshitam, Shukadeva Goswami says. What can be the dependency for Vasudeva? He is completely independent. How can you look at him and think he's bound up with material dependencies? There's none of that. Because he's fixed on what is best for Krishna, he is independent of the biases of the material world. What about Kamsa? Kim Makaryam. What is forbidden for Kamsa? Nothing. He can do anything sinful at any moment. You can depend on that. Kim Makaryam. Kamsa will do any forbidden, horrible thing at any time. Kim Dusyajan. What difficulty can be there for Vasudeva or a devotee like him who is simply thinking how to give pleasure to Krishna? So all these dynamics are going on. Kamsa, you can depend on his doing anything. No worry about sinful activities and reactions in this life or the next. It reminds me of nearing the end of World War II, Hitler's generals, they finally realized that they were probably going to lose. So they began to discuss amongst themselves, should we start negotiating for peace with the Allies? What kind of deal should we make? What can we promise them? And then history records that Hitler's generals began discussing, yeah, what does it matter what we promise? Why should we keep our promises? We can say anything because there's no moral, supreme moral authority. There's no universal law of morality. Right. Why should we keep our promises? It was a great realization for them. Therefore, Kim Makarium, someone who has no grounding in the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of God, which is actually Dharma, they can do anything. So Hitler's generals realize that. We can say anything to the Allies. We can promise them anything. We're under no obligation to honor what we say. After all, we just killed millions of people, so this is the demoniac attitude. But Vasudev skillfully dealt with this attitude. He offered Kamsa, I'll bring all the children to you. Now, what did Kamsa think? Just as we hear in terms of Narada Muni, even the demons trust Narada Muni. So Kamsa trusted Vasudev. Vasudev is giving me his word of honor. Kamsa was very satisfied with that. He took pleasure in that. Sure, I'll trust you, Vasudev, because you're one of those sentimental Vaishnavas who actually follows morality. Yeah, I'll rely on you. So even Kamsa, as despicable as he was, he recognized the qualities of a devotee. Yes, yasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvai gunais tatra samasatesara. Yes, Vasudev, in you reside all the qualities of the demigods. I hate the demigods, but anyway, I can rely on your word. Okay, I'll take shelter in your words, in your truthfulness. So then what happened? Vasudev, Devaki had their first child. And Vasudev brought the child to Kamsa, for Kamsa's disposal. Think about the paradox here. On the one hand, Vasudev was conscious that his word is, as they say, good as gold. He's famous for his word of honor, for not lying. So he took that into account. So you might say, well, if you're so moral, Vasudev, that you don't want to be known for telling a lie, then how can you bring your own son to Kamsa to be murdered? If you're going to be moral, then let's be moral on all sides. Why just be moral about not telling a lie? Why not be moral about not handing over your own child to be murdered? Grihastha Dharma means that you protect your children. So it seems contradictory. But of course, all contradictions are resolved when we understand what is Krishna's desire. And Vasudev understood that. Therefore, he brought the child to Kamsa. Vasudev had already propitiated Kamsa, saying, any children I'll bring to you. Because Vasudev was thinking, he's a Kshatriya, he's clever, he's thinking, first of all, we may not have any children. Children may not come. Secondly, Kamsa may die before my children are born. Thirdly, one of my children is supposed to kill Kamsa. So, in any case, let me promise him that I'll bring him the children, because we'll see what happens. If there are children in the future, if Kamsa lives that long, he's so despicable. And sooner or later, if I do have children, one of them is going to kill Kamsa. But now he did have a child. firstborn son, he's bringing it to Kamsa. Kamsa, he must have been having a good day or something. He's on a good wicket. So Vasudev, I've got nothing to fear from this firstborn. You know me, Kamsa, magnanimous, charitable, liberal, kind-hearted to all living entities. You may take this child back. It's the eighth child that we've got a bit of a problem with. But the first one, no, please, please. Vasudev, of course, understood that with such a character as Kamsa, you can't trust him. And Vasudev was right, of course. And to back up Vasudev's predictions, you can't trust him, you don't know what he's going to do in the future, Narada Muni came to agitate the situation. What was Narada Muni's angle? Wait a minute, what's happening here? Kamsa is becoming very liberal and magnanimous. He's given the child back. This action is delaying the Leela. Narada decided, I've got to accelerate the Leela past this blockage. The Acharyas use that word, that this giving back of the child was blocking Krishna's pastimes. So Narada came to accelerate things. So he spoke to Kamsa. The Acharyas describe that first Narada Muni sent his messenger inside Kamsa's city. Kamsa, please come out. I'd like to talk to you. Kamsa came out of the city and worshiped Narada Muni, seated him very respectfully. Just see, this is indeed showing how both the demigods and the demons, they can rely on Narada Muni. But even the demons don't envy him. Kamsa gave him such a reception. Dula sadhu. Of course, it's not that Kamsa was going to take any devotional instruction from Narada Muni. But Kamsa, he knew how to do affairs in the material world. Well, these sadhus, yeah, we treat them nicely. Narada Muni, he's the best sadhu. Okay. So, it's not that Narada was going to give Kamsa any transcendental instruction, as he does so many places in the Bhagavatam. Narada Muni agitated him. Kamsa, I, in my touring of the heavenly planets, was at a meeting of demigods. And what were they discussing? They were discussing how to cruelly kill you. Not simply kill you, but cruelly kill you. And all your associates. Furthermore, you know that prophecy, the eighth child of Devaki will kill you. Kamsa, what I heard in that assembly I heard grounds for you to think that any child of Devaki could be the one that kills you. So why was Narada Muni doing this? This is how Narada Muni displays his complete independence and lack of bias. He can apparently play any side, one side against the other, but he's always thinking, what does Krishna want? So just see that Kamsa depended on Narada's integrity completely. Narada Muni is telling me this now. It's not just the prophecy, the disembodied voice coming from the sky saying, Kamsa, you're such a fool, you don't know the eighth child of Devaki is going to kill you. It's not simply that. Narada Muni is telling me. What were Narada Muni's motives? First of all, as we said, he wanted to accelerate the appearance of the Supreme Lord. He knew that the more horrendous Kamsa behaved, the quicker Krishna would appear. Furthermore, Narada Muni was actually acting in the interests of Vasudeva and Devaki. He wanted them to quickly experience the transcendental bliss of having the Supreme Personality of Godhead come as their son. So he's actually acting in their favor. Although it seems like he's putting them into complete distress. it is impossible to understand Krishna and Krishna's pastimes from the material point of view, meaning when we are attached to material happiness. It's very difficult to understand because we'll think that Narada Muni is putting Vasudeva and Devaki in pain. Why is he siding with Kamsa? But when you focus on what is Krishna's pleasure, and that's what it means to be a devotee, to focus on what is Krishna's pleasure, then everything becomes clear. Clear, that is, beyond the platform of material happiness and distress. On the platform of material happiness and distress, nothing is ever clear. Everything is complicated, intricate, unresolved. But on the platform of Krishna's pleasure, then everything actually becomes crystal clear. And this way we can understand Narada Muni's behavior. So as a result of Narada Muni's advice, Kamsa killed everyone of the first six children of Devaki. Later in Krishna Leela, after Krishna in Vrindavan had killed Aristasura, Narada Muni came and talked to him again and told him, let me reveal to you what's actually been going on. Krishna in Vrindavan is actually the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. He's killed all the demons that you've sent there. Kamsa was being a king. He wanted to know what was the strategic maneuver here? How did the son of Devaki get to Vrindavan? And Narada Muni told him, Vasudev took him. At that point, Kamsa lost complete control of his senses. He reached for his sword and wanted to kill Vasudev and Devaki. But Narada Muni is so independent and unbiased, he's so equipoised, that he could skillfully deflect Kamsa's rage. Kamsa was ready to kill Vasudev and Devaki. Narada Muni said, wait, let's aim your anger in the right direction. It's not Vasudev and Devaki you have the direct problem with. Who is your direct problem? It's Krishna. Oh, yes, right. In other words, he refocused Kamsa's anger. And Narada Muni very expertly explained to Kamsa, you see, if you kill Vasudeva and Devaki, you see, Narada Muni is preaching according to time and place. He's getting into Kamsa's mind and dealing with how Kamsa thinks and sees things. Okay, let's consider the ramifications if you kill Vasudeva and Devaki. Narada Muni is dealing with a killer, so he starts discussing, the mechanics, the strategies of killing. If you kill Vasudeva and Devaki, Krishna and Balaram will find out and they'll probably flee. And you'll never know where they are. You'll have a hard time tracking them down. So it's probably good not to kill Vasudeva and Devaki. You have a problem with Krishna. So best that you let Vasudeva and Devaki live and you focus on getting rid of Krishna. Kamsa completely accepted that. Again, you might think, what is Narada Muni doing? Whose side is he on? Where is he at? But if you know that Narada Muni is always acting for Krishna's pleasure, he's completely 100% serving Krishna's interests, then you can see clearly. But still, think about it. What Narada Muni is doing seems to be putting people in material distress. But you see, the kind of Vaishnavs that Narada Muni is dealing with, like Vasudeva and Devaki, they're beyond all material happiness and distress. They're simply focused 100% on Krishna's pleasure. It's another reality. And that's the impression we get imprinted on our mind and heart when we hear Krishna Leela, that there's another level. This level of duality that we're so accustomed to in the material world. Ups and downs, happiness and distress, hot, cold, pain, pleasure. There's something beyond that. It's so far beyond that that these great devotees, they don't consider the dualities of material existence to be significant at all. It doesn't factor in their thinking. They're just focused on how to please Krishna, how to satisfy Krishna. Another questionable situation for Narada Muni. Kuvaratmajal Buddha Murtyayvayadva. Tvayamochitavati Bajakritavati. The two sons of Kuvera, Manigriva and Nalakuvara. What were they doing? Normal Kali Yuga activities. On the standard of Hollywood and Bollywood, Manigriva and Nalakuvara actually were quite tame. They're doing highly acceptable activities, laudable. They were enjoying in the river, drunk with young girls. This is the supreme destination of the Kali Yuga denizen. And yet Narada Muni cursed them. So you know how the history went. Yudhishthira, the Shastra explains, by chance Narada Muni came upon the situation. But you have to understand that Yudhishthira, that by chance in the Shastra, is not like how the scientists use the term by chance or by random combination. You see, the way the universe works from Krishna's point of view is that there are unlimited opportunities for conditioned souls to come upon a devotee of the Lord. The devotees of the Lord are, by our divine arrangement, they're here, they are everywhere, so that in one birth or another, a conditioned soul will chance upon a devotee of the Lord, but it's not by random chance, because it is the desire of the Lord that the devotees are everywhere. So when you see this word Yudhishthira, it is not the same as the scientific, current scientific conception of random interactions. That by chance is by Krishna's arrangement. So the girls covered up, the boys didn't. So Narada Muni began to consider, what's going on here? These demigod boys, they're destroying the good qualities of their birth. They don't know how to behave. What should I do? Pritchett Maharaj even wonders about this. He asks Shukadeva Goswami, was Narada Muni influenced by some kind of tamoguna, mode of ignorance? Because he cursed someone. Cursing is generally the sign of anger. Has anger entered in to Narada Muni? So then the whole history is relayed. How this was a simultaneous curse-blessing. Narada Muni cursed them, as you know, that they would take tree bodies, but he gave them two benedictions along with the benediction curse to be trees. He said, first of all, you're going to remember what happened. And secondly, you're going to see the Supreme Personality Godhead face to face. The Supreme Lord will set you free. One thing to note is that sometimes critics of the transmigration of the soul, they say, how can this transmigration of the soul, properly known as reincarnation, how can it be a just system, a system of integrity, when you don't remember the wrongs you did in your previous life? If this was actually an appropriate system of justice, you see, because the Vedic argument is that when dealing with contemporary religions, like Christianity, for example, is how unjust it is that you just have one life, and then if you make a mistake, you're eternally damned. This is not very just. Well, the other side has their arguments. How can you say that karma and reincarnation is a just system when you don't remember exactly the wrongs you did in your last life for which you're suffering now? What are you going to say to that? It would be, if you're punished for something, like when you commit a crime, you go to court and the judge reminds you what you did. Just like in the USA recently, former mayor of Detroit. He committed bribery, crimes of graft and siphoning off money. So the judge, when sentencing him, let him have it. You did this. You did that. You were an elected official. You were the mayor of the city, the people's choice. And you siphoned off millions of dollars. 28 years in jail. So we think that's justice. You're told what your crime is. You're reminded. You recognize it. You have to recognize that, otherwise they make the sentence even longer. You have to show some remorse. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. I didn't know what I was doing. He said, I wanted to be mayor. It was my ambition since a child. And I finally became mayor, and after 6 months I hated it. And so I figured maybe I needed a little extra income. And it took a few million dollars. So you have to show remorse and that you recognize what you did. The crime you did. But in reincarnation, the argument is, you don't remember what you did in your past life for which you're suffering now. So therefore, how can you say it's a just system? But actually, the proof of the justness of the reincarnation, transmigration system is not tied up with your memory. Because you may remember, you may not remember. It's tied up with the shastra. We are not memory dependent. We are shastra dependent. So that is the answer to that situation. We have a different viewpoint. Our system of justice is not based on human memory. It's based on the shastra. The shastra is far more reliable and far more comprehensive as a guideline for human behavior than memory. So we're not intimidated when people push memory. You don't remember what you did in your past life, because of which now you are suffering some illness, so how can this be just? Our basis is the shastra. But Narada Muni, in this case, with the Manigriva Nalakuvara, he gave him a special benediction. You will remember. That's something added on top. And of course, the greatest benediction he gave them was, you're going to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. What happened when the Supreme Personality of Godhead has Damodar released Nalakuvara and Manigriva? Actually, Lord Damodar was chuckling to himself. Here I am, the bound, and I'm setting them free. So many paradoxes are there in Bhagavatam. I'm bound by the gopis of Vrindavan. These older gopis have tied me up, and here I am, the bound, setting free these two sons of Kuvera. Krishna was thinking to himself, actually, I've got nothing to do with these boys, these demigod boys. I'm not into them at all. But my devotee Narada Muni has arranged a situation. That's my priority. Narada Muni has said this, I have to fulfill it. As for the sons of Kuvera, enjoying demigods. But Narada Muni, he has arranged this, therefore I will follow through. So the actual setting free of Nalakuvara and Manigriva shows Krishna's fidelity to Narada Muni. And the two boys, Nalakuvara and Manigriva, now set free from tree bodies, they knew it's because of Narada Muni. And they told Krishna that we pledge ourselves to be the servant of the servant, especially we are the servants of Narada Muni. They were grateful. They weren't angry. Why did you curse us and make us stand as trees? What a horrible thing to do. We were just doing We're just young boys, just following our hormones, and everyone does it. What do you want out of us? They were thankful. This is the transcendental platform. This is our natural platform. So they expressed their gratitude to Narada Muni, and then they finished out their term of existence as demigods, and we're going to go back to Godhead, just as the Prachetas are going back to Godhead. As far as Vasudeva and Devaki, they're going to be so appreciative of Narada Muni because they recognize, because of Narada Muni, we got to be with Krishna in Mathura. Krishna came to Mathura to kill Kamsa, and we could finally see Krishna, our son. And in the 11th canto, upon the disappearance, the Moksha Lila, the Yadus had already been annihilated, Krishna's about to leave the ordinary vision of this world, Vasudev asks Narada Muni for instruction. So that shows you how everyone involved, Vasudev, Devaki, Narada Muni, they're beyond ordinary biases, contingencies, dependencies of the material world. In this way, as Prabhupada writes, a perfect Vaishnava's position should be just like Narada Muni's, completely independent and unbiased. Completely independent means only dependent on what gives Krishna pleasure. Completely independent from material contingencies, material complications. This is actually the standard of pure bhakti. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.